Chicago, 2011. A cop is murdered. Police and prosecutors swear they have the trigger man. He swears he didn't do it. How far will each side go to prove they're right?
Like it's just one bombshell after another, you know, where you're like, what?
The story of a PlayStation, a brain-eating amoeba, and the relentless pursuit of justice. Off Duty, out now. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
3 seconds left, the step in, the takeaway, and it's over! UConn, all they do is win!
We've had the number one offense in the country all year. And again, give UConn credit.
I think we had a really great season, a special season, making history. I love it. Each and every one of my teammates, and I wouldn't have wanted to do it with anyone else.
Been doing this a long time, and I've never been around a group of guys who've given me more joy.
Hey, Chicago. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Before we get to our conversation on what having a winning college sports team means for the school, the fans, and the local economy, I want to remind you that you can hear a rundown of the latest stories happening here in the Chicago area at the very end of this podcast. Now let's turn to the conversation that you clicked on. For the last few weeks, it felt like the whole state was riding with the Illini. I'm talking about the various watch parties, the social media posts, even water cooler talk in the office. The team's historic March Madness run united fans right up until Saturday's loss. But the energy around the Fighting Illini hasn't died down. In this episode, we go beyond the heartbreak from the end result and dig into the ripple effects of winning streaks like the one that we just witnessed with a panel of sports junkies. Is winning just about pride and bragging rights, or is there something more behind all the hype? At the table was Matt Brown, publisher of the sports newsletter Extra Points, Robert Rosenthal with the Illini Boardroom Podcast, and Steve Greenberg, Chicago Sun-Times sports columnist. Matt kicked things off with how he's reflecting on not just the Illini loss, but the team's basketball season overall. Here he is.
I think Illinois really did have a great season.
Yeah.
You kind of forget about this, that it really had been that long since they had made a Final Four because of the great tradition and high-level talent that keeps coming in here through this program. I think they were probably right. They got a little bit unlucky, but there's no reason for any Illinois fan to feel bad, I think, about how this season went.
Yeah. Steve, the Illini shot poorly from the field. Was that the biggest factor in this loss?
That's a good question. They did shoot poorly. UConn looked to me to be really well prepared for the game. So I think it was a good moment for Dan Hurley. Not as good for Illinois coach Brad Underwood. But the shots, when they don't fall, he said he liked the shots Illinois got. They just didn't make them. So that was a huge factor. But I think UConn's been there before Illinois hasn't. That was a factor, too, that steeliness that UConn brings to games that are this big.
And Robert, I think Matt brought up a great point, because it was a heck of a season. And going into the weekend, it already kind of felt like a win for Illinois, because it's been a long time since our state made it this far, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it reminds people of 2005, when that run actually came through Chicago and the Elite Eight win was at Rosemont and everything else. And then the Final Four was in St. Louis. When you have a Final Four that close, so many people in orange and blue showed up in Indy. And, you know, I was at a shop here in Champaign on Thursday evening trying to pick something up for my son. Couldn't find a parking spot. It was just solid people everywhere.
Yeah.
Looking for a few more pieces of orange and blue.
What do you think made this season better and more successful, Robert?
You know, it's interesting how they relied on two freshmen, Keaton Wagler and David Mirkovic. There was so much talk before the season of the Balkan Five and how Brett Underwood had recruited players from Eastern Europe and had good relationship with several youth programs over there and was bringing the kids over here for that. And then it ended up that the star was a unheralded freshman from Shawnee, Kansas, that came in and became, you know, Big Ten Freshman of the Year and second team All-American. And just like that, he's going to have his jersey raised to the rafters here in Champaign.
Yeah. What are you thinking, Matt? What made this season more successful?
I think that
is I would certainly agree with all of those things. I think that the team did something that they hadn't really done the past couple of seasons, which is be a little bit more consistent. And they in the regular season had an extraordinarily efficient offense. It didn't work out there in the end, but in an era where roster continuity is so much harder to get, and athletic departments and basketball programs have to do more creative strategies to bring in players and keep them, to be able to have a team that is one of the most international, but also taking advantage of younger homegrown talent, right here in the greater Midwest. That's kind of the format that you have to hit for a program like Illinois that's not going to build talent the same way that Duke might to make a deep run.
What do you think the fan experience has been like?
You know, I have yet to hear any Illinois fan reading my publication or that here in Chicago that's complained about that experience. And I think that's interesting because we're in an era of college athletics where the fan experience in general is generally not seen to be as high of a priority. Mm-hmm. There's been lots of changes, whether that's expansion, whether that's roster, lack of continuity that damage what a lot of fans care about here, but winning replaces a lot of those things.
Yeah. For sure.
And if you're playing high profile games and the tickets are not exorbitantly expensive and you're able to see your team wherever you are, people are going to be happy and they're going to be willing to maybe pay a little bit extra for Peacock if you're competing for Final Four bids.
Steve, I want to take a step back here because for people who are not super familiar with college sports specifically, a lot of basketball fans will be invested in a team because let's say they went to that college, which makes sense, right? Or maybe their state doesn't actually have a professional team in the NBA like Connecticut. But we clearly do. We are rich with sports teams here in the Chicago area, right? I'm thinking about the Bulls. I'm thinking about the Chicago Sky. So what would you say, Steve, makes college basketball so exciting for Illinoisans when we have so many other options too?
I mean, I think the Big Ten is the pinnacle right now of college basketball. It's the best league. It's the best league in football too. So, there's a huge Big Ten presence of those schools in Chicago. The basketball programs at the college level in Chicago, if we're talking about Loyola, DePaul, UIC, et cetera, they've struggled for a long time. So, I grew up in the 70s and 80s when DePaul was great. DePaul was the coolest thing in Chicago sports. If we get back to that, it would be amazing. But college basketball is different from the pros. Even with players being paid, it's just different. The level of effort on every trip down the court is extraordinary. And it's still a different game than the pros, even if we're paying these guys. And you see it in this NCAA tournament like never, any other time. I mean, that's why it's so beloved, this event.
Mm-hmm. Robert, let's talk about the business side of things. It was a good season to be a sports bar owner, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, this was, from all around the state, from Chicago to Champaign, it is quite a boost, especially, they always will have people coming to watch tournament games come the Thursday afternoon, that type of thing. But mm-hmm. Yes, beyond that, it's a huge boost when the local team is there.
Yeah. Talk more about that, Matt, and just the economic boost to businesses from not just the bars, but I'm thinking of even the stores that sell all the sports gear.
Sure. And we'll be able to get a more specific picture of this early next year, right? Like I have Illinois' itemized budget here in front of me. And the athletic department itself at Illinois makes just a hair under $200 million a year in total reported revenue. And the biggest single chunk of that comes from television. And that figure, about 66, and change million, that doesn't really change whether Illinois is good or bad at basketball. That's part of a longer contract. But many of the other major revenue sources, whether that's from alumni donations, corporate sponsorships, or selling of licensed gear, that really can fluctuate depending on if you're good or not. So, last fiscal year, Illinois is reporting a hair under 9 million in royalties from licensing, I would imagine in that next report, that's going to go significantly up, because when you're making the Final Four, you want to buy the comfortable Illinois commemorative t-shirt. You want to go buy the shot glasses. You want to go buy all of that stuff. And that stuff is often sold by official retailers that locally that are able to pick up some of that. And that's the figures where you can kind of see some of that immediate impact.
Yeah, we actually heard this morning from Finley Dunn's, which is a local sports bar in Lakeview. They say that even though Illinois lost, they still expect a decent crowd for the final tonight.
Oh, sure.
Sound about right?
Yeah. One of the important things to remember here about this particular college basketball season is that it's been pretty chalk heavy, meaning that you haven't had a lot of mid and low major upsets. The teams that are going to be competing in the championship game, Michigan and UConn, two elite programs that have been near the top of the country all season and are going to have lots of players who are going to pursue professional careers afterwards. That's the kind of game that's going to attract in a lot of casual interest, knowing that, hey, these are guys that are going to be in the NBA. These are two of the very best teams. It's a little bit harder if you have a team that was a 6 or a 7 seed that comes in. That might be a fun Cinderella story, but if you're a casual college sports fan, that doesn't bring you in as much here. So even if Illinois is not playing, a lot of America is going to be tuning in for this championship game.
Now, Steve, let's talk some more about the impacts here on the university itself. What kind of positives do you see for the school and for the students and even for Urbana-Champaign?
Well, I think it's a proven thing, and it's a little funny to me, but that athletic success in football, in basketball at the highest levels, it does affect enrollment. It does affect applications for enrollment, I should say. And so I think it will for Illinois and just the, pride people feel. It's I was talking the other day with Josh Whitman, the athletic director, and he was describing the feeling on campus, the feeling for him walking around and seeing people, happiness, elation, and that it just felt different, and that it has changed on his watch over his 10 years there with the success of football, basketball, women's basketball, baseball. It affects the nature of a campus, even if it's only incremental. It's a nice thing.
Yeah, and Robert, it also looks like when the team does well, and this makes logical sense. The university sees a boost in applications from prospective students. People start to want to go there. So success doesn't stay on the court, does it?
Yeah, I mean, even I'm sure Matt could tell you about the study with Alabama years ago when Alabama football was so well done and how much it boosted not just applications, but faculty and everything else of the boost that the exposure got them. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, living in Champaign, it's been, it's not just the people in and around of putting a sign in the bank window of Go Illini and that type of thing, but it's also everywhere on campus. It is students rallying together kind of thing,
yes,
marching down Green Street after making, going to the alma mater statue. It just brings out all of the, hey, that's my school. That's where I wanted to go. I mean, I can tell you personally, I chose to go to the University of Illinois in 1989 when they were in the Final Four.
Ah.
And I told my mom and dad, okay, what do I got to do? Like, they said, go talk to your guidance counselor, find out what you need on the ACT, and find out if your transcript is good enough.
Yes.
And I set off to do that as a high school sophomore. So I'm sure there are other kids in this state doing the same.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, again, it's applications coming in, but it's also university fundraising, too. What's that story, Matt, about Alabama? What else can you share?
Sure. So the phenomenon that everyone's describing here is something that in academia we call the Flutie effect. It's named after Doug Flutie. He used to be a quarterback at Boston College, through a famous Hail Mary pass to beat Miami, and then suddenly applications and donations and interest in Boston College immediately spiked. And I've written about this several times at Extra Points. There's been academic peer-reviewed research on this phenomenon, and it shows that if you are either consistently beating expectations or winning actual championships, that there is this is a documented effect. And Alabama is probably one of the contemporary examples of this being very successful, but also because Alabama as an institution was specifically trying to court out-of-state residents. They really needed to reach outside of Tuscaloosa because the state of Alabama doesn't produce that many wealthy college-bound high school graduates. And so the national exposure that came from the Nick Saban dynasty was critical for Alabama recruiting students in Schaumburg or in the northern suburbs or in Connecticut or Maryland or anywhere else.
I see.
That's not true for everybody. And I think it's also important to point out that this impact is temporary. So if Illinois, you know, goes to the Sweet 16 next year, and even if they were in the preseason top 12, there won't be a boost. So it's not something that I think transforms the university necessarily, but I would much rather be trying to fundraise, whether that's in Springfield or among rich donors or anybody else, if I can point to a Final Four than well, without one.
Mm. Yeah, the Fighting Illini women's team, I want to talk about them too. I mean, it wasn't too shabby this year, right? They were a 7 seed in the NCAA tournament, but they got knocked out in the second round. Would you say, Steve, the men's and women's teams for Illinois are on the rise? How would you rate them going into next season?
I would certainly say the women's program is on the rise. The men's program, you know, it has been at a very high level. 7 years, over the last 7 years, Illinois has won more Big Ten games than any other school in this enormous, sprawling 18-school conference. So, I mean, that tells you where the men's program is at.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's, you know, but I think a lot of Illinois fans are feeling also, you know, a little bit less than fully sated, in the sense that Illinois won, I think, 50 games, second most of any school in the country in the NCAA tournament without ever winning it. So, you know, the next step for Illinois really is going this far again and beyond. But certainly the men's program's on the rise. The women's program's on a more dramatic rise, you know, steeper incline. They have come on, like, in a very big way the last few years.
That's all exciting news, right? So the Fighting Illini's winning streak, it might be over, but we still got the national championship to decide tonight. Let me go around the room. Predictions. Matt.
You know, hopefully this stays in this market, because as a former son of Columbus, if this gets back to me, they will take my diploma and they will keep me from crossing the state lines. But it's difficult for me to see Michigan not winning this game.
Robert?
You know, I have to go the other way only because of this crazy UConn mystique. You know, there's a kid who's a senior on UConn. I think he's now 18-1 in the NCAA tournament in the last 4 years. I don't know what it is when they get in the tournament, but they just, there's some kind of magic. So I'm going to ride that magic, and I'm going to think that UConn's going to win.
UConn. Okay, Steve.
Michigan's going to win, and it will be the first national championship for any Big Ten school since 2000, a streak that defies reason. It's time to end.
All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see. Steve Greenberg is a Chicago Sun-Times sports columnist. Robert Rosenthal is the Illini Boardroom podcast. And Matt Brown is with the sports newsletter Extra Points. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Turn to the top stories of the day, from a police helicopter chase for a stolen teddy bear downtown, to farmers market season, to White Sox baseball, and more. We sat down with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane, reporter and weekend anchor Michael Puente, and arts and culture reporter Courtney Kippers. We're in the middle of the Holy Week, so that's where the conversation started. Here's Courtney sharing some details of how she celebrated Easter.
Oh, we had a little family Easter brunch yesterday. That was really nice.
No wonder you're so tired.
Wasn't that happening, but it was lots of good food. It was a nice gathering.
Yeah. We went to church, and so our church kind of joined with two others in another church building, and it was like this larger celebration.
Oh, that's nice.
I met some new people. Nice. There was some time sort of created in the middle of the service to sort of walk around and just greet people and say hello and hug, and I was like, man, people can be so nice. I felt like I'd been missing that in humanity.
you know.
Well, yeah. I think it right now, especially in Chicago, we're all feeling that sense of wanting to renew, right? The rebirth, the spring is coming. We can't wait for it to get here. So I feel like that's a pretty shared feeling right now amongst most of us.
Mm-hmm. Mike, what was your weekend like? I mean, aside from being here.
Well, yesterday I have to work, headed down back home. The wife, Grace, and my girl spent actually Easter with my sister Liz and her husband Willie, and we had a nice dinner, ham. They made everything. My brother-in-law even made, for the first time, homemade mac and cheese, and it came out great. So, Big Willie, you did great.
Big Shout Willie. Out to Willie.
Yes. Well, our Chicago Pope, I'm talking about Leo the 14th, mm-hmm. had a strong Easter message yesterday. What did he have to say, Mike?
That's right. Well, you know, he called for people to lay down arms. This was his first Easter message from St. Peter's Basilica. And he didn't mention anybody by name, but, you know, he did talk about he's hoping, you know, that people lay down on their arms. And he does acknowledge, though, there's indifference to suffering caused by wars, though. But he's calling about peace, mm-hmm. dialogue, and calling for an end to conflicts worldwide.
Yeah. Peace. Peace reign.
He brought that peace to the South Side, though, for Sox fans over the weekend.
You know what? We're not talking about that yet, Claire.
But we saw people dressed as the Pope for opening day. It was a common costume this year on the South
Absolutely.
Side. And they were bringing that spirit in for Easter weekend.
And I want to be clear. I'm only salty, and we'll get to this, because the Sox just wrapped up playing the Blue Jays. Y'all know where I'm from. I'm sad.
But you don't have the Pope, and that's unfortunately not your fault.
Get yourself a Pope, it's you might have a chance.
Things might turn around.
Wow, guys. Feeling the love here on a Monday morning. Well, today is also a big day for sports fans. Space fans. From sports to space. Space fans. So Artemis the second. Artemis II, the first crewed mission around the moon in 50 years. I mean, they'll be doing a lunar flyby today. Anyone paying attention to this?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's everywhere,
right? They're going to be on the dark side of the moon pretty soon. And for 40 minutes, they're going to be out of contact with NASA. So that
That's
could be kind
of,
you know, Isn't what if they get captured by aliens?
What does that mean? Like 40 minutes of not being able to contact the crew?
That's right. Well, because they're on the dark side of the moon, and there's, you know, you can't get those radio waves back down to Earth. So they're going to be on their own. And hopefully their toilet's working.
Right. Their toilet was on the brink again today. But they are going where the satellites cannot reach, which is kind of interesting. But that's what we've been following the news. They're going further than any astronauts have ever gone before. Yeah. And apparently this launch could take 7 hours. That's the latest from NPR. So they're going to get a lot of photos in this flyover. They're going to see like a kind of a cool solar eclipse that we'll have photos of. So a lot
Amazing.
To look forward to during all things considered.
And we're talking, of course, folks, about the four astronauts that are on the Orion spacecraft. They're around halfway through their 10-day journey. They've entered the so-called sphere of influence. This is where the moon's gravity exerts more force on them than Earth's gravity.
Orbiting the moon.
Ooh, yeah. Wild. So flyby begins around 1 p.m. today.
Super cool.
I'll be praying for him.
And then they're supposed to be back on Friday, splashing into the Pacific Ocean. So it's a week's long.
Jeez, like nothing happened.
Just casual. Right. Spring break.
Right, exactly.
What did you do this week? Oh, you know, just up by the moon.
Dark side of the moon.
Chilling.
NBD.
All right, back to Earth. We got some controversy happening around the theater award known as the Jeffs, Courtney. What's happening?
Yeah, so the Jeffs you can sort of think of as our local Tony Awards here in Chicago. And last month they held their annual non-equity award ceremony. So this celebrates the best in Chicago storefront theater. And that's where this controversy sort of really begins, because that night the Jeffs gave an honor to Invictus Theater's artistic director, Charles Askenizer, who is currently under investigation from that theater company's board due to allegations of abuse that surfaced on social media from actors who have worked with him in the past. So that part sort of stirs up people's frustrations with the Jeffs deciding to give this award at this time. And then additionally, some theater companies have sort of taken to social media to call into question who the Jeff judges are and how these things are decided. And so some of those theater companies say that Jeff, committee members have fallen asleep at shows that they are at their companies to see.
Fallen asleep while there was a show on that,
that they were
supposed
there,
to be judging?
That they were there to make a judgment on. And
Can't happen.
Yeah, and some theater companies led by people of color who say that there's a really a Eurocentric lens on the judging as well. Mm. So a lot's happening here.
Yeah, and you weren't wrong. A lot of people are upset, and it looks like at least one Jeff's committee member has resigned publicly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, David Rice is a former judge for the Jeff Committee. He resigned, and he said that was really motivated by the Jeffs choosing to give this award to a director under investigation. I should say, for their part, the Jeffs say that they will do a review of its judging and voting practices, and they'll have a report of findings by July 1st.
Over to you, Claire. Metra, they're piloting a new ticketing system. It may lead commuters to seeing few conductors on the trains. Tell us more.
Yeah, fewer. So Metra piloting essentially a way to make ticketing more efficient. This is something that would happen before you even get on your train. You would just sort of go up to a scanning device and scan your own ticket, as opposed to sitting on the train and letting the conductor do that for you. The technology will be piloted at first during off-peak trains, so likely not during your morning or evening rush hours. And it's only going to be at select downtown stations to start. Metra says conductors will still be validating tickets, but overall, they're not going to be waiting for folks to sort of queue up their apps, their Venture apps on their phone, which I guess takes the most amount of time. And that's the latest from Metra.
I mean, my question is, was the system broken? Why are we fixing it?
You know, time is money, Sasha, and I really think that, you
I just
know,
don't want to take jobs away from people.
Absolutely. Just, and, it's, you know, and it's
I like the conductors.
It's something you look forward to seeing,
yes.
Me too.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's on transit across the country. You know, you've got conductors, the guys in the hats that check your ticket. So I think it's just about cost savings potentially, but also just making it quicker for people who are on the go or, you know what I mean, they don't want to be bogged down with having to wait in a train for their conductor to come.
I'm thinking about the people who rush to the train, get on, and have kind of gotten used to the idea that I can just buy the ticket right there from my seat real quick. Now, if you've got to scan something beforehand, that could be problematic. So we'll see how that works out. Mike, this one is kind of hard for me to wrap my head around. A 3-foot teddy bear was stolen downtown. It boarded a CTA train, and it got a helicopter rescue.
Let me use my serious radio voice for this one.
Please do, because I'm
already
laughing.
Chicago police officers sprang into action, even using a helicopter to rescue a teddy bear stolen from a downtown chocolate shop. Truffles, the 3-foot brown bear in a blue hat, don't laugh, and overalls that was taken Friday night from his home at the Rocky Mountain Chocolate Factory at 3 North State Street. Operation Teddy Bear, strong work, an officer was heard saying. Yes, they used a helicopter to track down teenagers playing around, stole truffles, took them for a ride all over the city for about an hour.
Folks, I want you to know that this is a real story that Mike is reading right now. We are not
trying
kidding
to be
around.
Serious. This is a real story.
This really happened.
This is not April Fool's.
Friday night.
April Fool's Day. Yeah, the teenagers tried to take off with truffles, boarding a CTA Red Line L train, but they were stopped by the police officers at the 35th Street Station. Yes, police officers. Truffles was rescued and brought back home. You know, two people were in custody with charges pending, according to the police. The police didn't comment on why a helicopter was used to recover
which
the teddy bear.
Which is question number one.
Right. Resources.
Why did a helicopter get used here? Were there not other ways to use those resources?
Don't cops have better things to be doing?
Batman was unavailable.
Truffles, so. The teddy bear, went on a wild ride.
Maybe he liked it. We don't know. We'll
have
to
like
check
Flat Stanley
stores.
In elementary school. Like, this is a great journey for Truffles here.
But like, a helicopter, though?
Truffles.
Potentially a children's book could come of this, Courtney.
Totally.
This is our bestseller.
Listen, I am super happy for that chocolate store. They got Truffles back.
Of course.
I mean, he has a permanent place right in the window. He's very cute with his blue overalls. You got to see him. Go to suntimes.com. The story's online. But I just think that entire escapade was probably a little unnecessary.
That's right. Well, the store owner said, you know, they're kids. I did stupid things when I was 17, too. But seeing them jump in and grab truffles was just an odd thing to watch. So,
I mean, what happened to just egging houses? You know, anyway, not trying to give these teens any ideas. Claire, what else are you watching?
Well, you've been piquing your interest about when you can buy tickets to go to the Obama Presidential Center and Museum, but now we have an answer for you.
Yes.
So tickets going on sale May 6th. That's for the general public. There are reportedly going to be some pre-sales for, you know, friends and family. Certainly the media will likely be invited. But a spokesperson for the Obama Foundation saying tickets will be available to the public to purchase. You're going to be timed, too, while you're in this. So you need a ticket, and then you're going to be up against the clock. Don't know how long they're going to give you for the museum itself.
Well,
I think
I wanted
grounds,
to explore.
Right. And, you know, you are a darling of the media, so they might let you do that.
Yeah, they probably won't.
And this round of tickets that's going on sale May 6th is actually going to include dates through the fall. So throughout the summer up into September. And there will also be a free opportunity for Illinois residents to visit the museum for free on Tuesdays.
Nice.
So those will likely be the longest lines, but you can save some money by doing it.
Yeah, May 6th. I am bookmarking that right now. Courtney, the rain this weekend, it didn't stop the kickoff to farmers market season, but we know that vendors are also grappling with financial burdens, right? That's still happening in the background. And we're talking about burdens caused by the Trump administration.
Yeah, that's right. Our colleague, Erica Thompson, was out talking with folks this weekend at the Green City Market, one of the popular farmers markets that kicked off this weekend. And vendors were telling her that they're feeling really strained right now. And like you mentioned, that's because the Trump administration has proposed cuts to the agriculture department and then also rising gas prices due to the war in Iran. They're making things really tough on local farmers. And so they really are looking for the support of local shoppers this summer, spring and summer, to keep them going.
Absolutely. Mike, let's talk about it. It's time. The White Sox. Y'all swept my Toronto Blue Jays. I'm sad, but I'm happy for the White Sox. Because we've been looking for a turnaround for this team.
Absolutely. And you know what? We just didn't beat any Toronto team. They're the defending American League champions.
Hello.
So a three-game sweep
on our name.
I was there with my daughter on opening day. It's a magical time. So we got this new Japanese slugger, Munetaka Murakami. He has four home runs already.
He's a big guy. I was there yesterday seeing him in person too. And I was like, oh, wow.
That is the most in the first eight games for a major league player, Japanese-born major league player ever. So we've got a potential star on our hands. And the White Sox, they're I don't know if they're turning heads just yet, but they're doing a lot better than a lot of people expect.
Well, to that point, there's a headline on the Sun Times that says, I got to read this to you, breaking news, White Sox, after sweeping Blue Jays, are almost mediocre.
That's right.
Ouch.
And we're 4-5.
Ouch.
We're not in last place. Where I think we got the same record as the Cubs, which I think they are in last place in their division. No shade, or a little bit.
Look,
after several years of just, let's face it, just a terrible White Sox team, we got a little, something to think about. We got Colson Montgomery hitting home runs too. So this team is playing pretty good.
Yeah. Look, they looked good. I cried, but I was still the Chicago side of my heart was proud.
We also got big news over the weekend on Friday that Ozzie Guillen's number 13 jersey, it's going to be retired by the White Sox.
Oh,
they're
going to
have a big ceremony for him, and it came as a surprise. He was on the telecast crying about it. He didn't know about it. So, congratulations to Ozzie Guillen. Very well beloved in Chicago and well deserved.
Nice.
Former player and White Sox manager.
Well, before I let you both go in, speaking of sports, the Illini, right? Are either of you fans of college basketball?
Yeah.
I'm excited to watch tonight.
Yeah.
I was rooting for the Big Orange to do well. And, they played well, but not well enough.
Heck of a season, though.
Heck of a season by them. Absolutely.
Yeah, they lost to UConn, University of Connecticut, 62-71.
Well, I'm going to be rooting for the Big Blue Michigan tonight. That's Mel Ballara's alma mater.
Oh, yes.
So,
me too,
hey,
Mike.
Let's go Big Ten. Let's go Michigan.
Midwestern.
If we can't get orange, let's go blue.
Let's go blue.
WBEZ's Claire Lane, Michael Puente, and Courtney Kippers.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Maha Ahmed, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in-the-loop. Thanks for listening.